Okay, welcome. I'm Stephen Adams for a more important impact on the future of our community. So we very much appreciate and commend you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be here this evening to participate in the process. Secondly, before we get started, I want to emphasize that we're not we're not here to try to sell you on anything this evening. When we began this process several months ago, we decided our approach was not going to be one of us trying to determine what people would vote for and then design a measure around that, because our ultimate goal isn't simply to try to figure out ways to get you to pay more taxes. We know that you probably don't like paying taxes, and believe me, we don't like having to talk about it. But we do have a professional responsibility to identify future needs important to the community, to communicate those needs to the community, and then to try to develop strategies of how they can best be addressed in the most fair and effective way. And so that's what this is really all about. Hopefully, as we go through this presentation, it'll be evident to you that our real approach is just to try to be as open and honest and upfront with you in terms of what we believe the important needs are and how they can be addressed, and then just leave it up to the community's judgment to determine if these are needs important enough to dedicate additional resources to. Now, that being said, while we are not trying to design a ballot measure simply around what we think people will vote for, at the same time, we are very interested in your feedback and input. And that's because we want to gather as much information as we can to take back to the City Council when we present this item to them for their consideration, which is coming up soon. And so his existing budget and financial status and how we're currently managing your resources. Then we'd like to present some information to you on the city's long-range financial plan and planning process and the future needs that were identified within that process. And then we'd like to discuss with you some of the information about strategies the city is working on how to best address those needs. And then lastly, we'll provide as much time as necessary for you to ask questions and provide your input. And we have all our department directors here this evening to be available, so hopefully we can answer any question you may come up with. So at this time, to get started, I'd like to call up our Director of Financial Services, Angela Kratch, and she'll give you just a little quick overview of the city's existing budget.
Good evening. I get to do the boring stuff. I'm pleased to say that the city's current budget is balanced and we were able to maintain existing service levels. This was not an easy budget to bring together with the needs of the community and departments on one side and the loss of funds due to the state budget crisis combined with rising expenses on the other side. The two-year citywide appropriations of approximately $39 million will be used primarily for salaries and benefits at 59% and operation costs at 27%. The general fund draws the primary focus due to the fact that it finances a majority of the traditional government services such as public safety, recreation, parks, building, and planning. The general fund is estimated to receive approximately $12.5 million in revenues and transfers this year, followed by almost $13.7 million next year. As you can see, over 50% of the city's budget goes towards public safety services. I'll turn it back over to our city manager, Steve Adams.
Okay, before we can really discuss the need for additional resources, we feel it's extremely important for the city to be able to review and demonstrate whether or not we're currently using our existing resources efficiently. And this, the current budget that was just described to you is something we're very proud of, and that's because we've had to work very hard to get the city in what we believe is a pretty financially stable position with regard to our ongoing operations. And we've been able to do that despite having to face some very difficult financial challenges over the past few years, primarily due to the state taking funds away from the city, and have been able to do that without cutting services. And throughout this effort, that has been our number one overriding priority, was to address our financial challenges without it negatively impacting our services to the community, because those services are what we're all about. And to do that, required us to make some tough decisions and to restructure a number of our operations to increase efficiency. And so these are just a few examples of some of the measures that we have implemented over the past few years to try to address this effort. They include things like restructuring our fleet maintenance operation, and that eliminated one halftime position, restructuring the City Hall reception staff and area, and that replaced it. And then beyond that, we also achieved significant savings in our workers' compensation costs through a very successful safety program and by joining a statewide pool. We reduced computer costs with installation of a fiber network that was installed at no cost by the city's cable operator in exchange for an extension to their franchise agreement. The police department last year provided DARE services to the city of Grover Beach under contract. And we're currently sharing fire administration and training staff with the city of Grover Beach. In fact, the most recent measure we implemented was just this last Tuesday, the city council approved a new contract for street sweeping services. And by combining the contract, or at least coordinating the contract with the city of Grover Beach, we were able to get a reduction in the cost for that contract, and our costs went down. So that's another example of working with our neighboring communities to reduce costs. Now, while cost efficiency efforts will continue to be an important part of our overall long-term funding strategies, we do believe that we have done what is necessary to get our financial house in order. So in other words, probably one of the key points we want to leave with you this evening or make is that this whole effort, this is not about government needing to raise taxes simply to fund what we're doing now. As you can see, we've gone through actions around California. And we included in the study all cities that were full-service cities with comparable population, size, age, and growth rate as the city of Aurora Grande, basically utilizing this criteria you see before you. So based on that criteria, these were the cities that met that criteria around the state of California and were included in the study. Now, it's very difficult in these studies to tell you that we can make very specific conclusions because it's very difficult to make good apples-to-apples comparisons because each community is different and each organization is different. However, the results of the study did strongly support the fact that the city of Arroyo Grande's operations and productivity level is very high given the resources we have available. And if you go to the next slide, there's just a few examples I pulled out that are evidence of that. First, in terms of our general administrative overhead staff, we found that we were the lowest staff per capita. In development services staff, which we combined for that category, our building and life safety division and our development services staff, we were the second lowest per land use permit processed. In the fire department, our full-time paid fire staffing is the lowest in both per capita and per service call when compared to the other jurisdictions in the study. And then lastly, the police department staffing is second lowest per capita in those cities compared, but at the same time, we are third lowest. We can maintain our operations in the long term. And so we developed this process basically in two phases. The first phase, we simply looked at and projected out what we're doing now. And the purpose of that was to determine, can we maintain our existing ongoing operations, what we're doing now, in the long term with our existing revenues? And based on those projections And based on the efficiency measures we talked about earlier that have already been implemented, although things will continue to be tight, we do project that we are confident that we can maintain our ongoing operations in the long term. When I say long term, our long-range financial plan is a 10-year plan, without any additional revenues. So given those results, we moved on to the second phase of the process, which was to identify those things that we believe the city should be doing now and have not been able to or have been deferred due to lack of financial resources, and then also major needs coming up to the city. And the city has some major needs on the horizon, primarily large capital projects that originally had expected to be funded through state and federal funding that are in the dollar range that just clearly cannot be funded with the revenue sources we have now. And so in that phase of the process is when we begin to identify a pretty significant shortfall that we felt important to bring to the community's attention and to try to address. And the other thing I wanted to emphasize is that we worked very hard to not make this a wish list, to only identify those things that are the most important needs in the community. And as we go through this, we'll talk a little bit about them and some of the other things we did to try to confirm that that was the case.
In developing the projections for the city's long-range financial plan, we looked at several trends. The city's redevelopment agency is projected to become a viable funding tool within the next couple of years. The city's property tax revenue has continued to grow at a healthy rate. The bad news is sales tax revenue has remained relatively flat, and we project this to continue. Demographics and development of additional retail in SLO and Napomo may threaten our existing sales tax base. Due to the increased cost of housing, personnel costs are likely to continue to increase. While property taxes continue to increase, it is likely it will be at a reduced rate. The continued lack of support from the state and federal government for capital improvement projects is expected to continue. And finally, as the city approaches build-out, building permits and related fees are projected to decrease. As you all know, nothing is certain when dealing with the state. However, the city's achieved a great victory in the passing of Proposition 1A. This proposition protects the city funds from state raids. To date, the state has taken over $4.6 million from our city and continues to take approximately $700,000 each year to help balance the state budget. The city is currently working to establish financial independence from the state. I'll turn it back over to Steve.
Thanks, Angie. In the long-range financial plan, as I said, we've identified a number of needs that have not been addressed. And they generally fall into the following four categories: transportation improvements, infrastructure, maintenance and upgrades, public safety, which includes you a little more information about the first two needs that I just outlined.
Thanks, Steve. Good evening, everyone. I'd like to talk a little bit about the first two items on our future needs that have been identified. The first one is the transportation improvements. Of course, one of our major projects that we are undertaking is the Briscoe Halcyon Interchange. If we rely solely on the state funding, this project could be delayed as much as 10 to 15 years. What our goal is to reduce that down 5 to 7 years. And to do that, we need to increase the local funding. Also, the estimated annual cost to finance the local amount will also be considered. Just to give you an idea on how the approval process is done. It's pretty much a five-phase process. The first phase we've already completed, which is the project study report and what's known as a project development support document. And we've identified five alternatives there, some funding and a scheduling for the improvements. The next phase is which we are currently undertaking is the project approval and environmental determination. This is where we select the preferred alternative out of those five that have been identified previously, and then we do the final environmental documentation on that alternative. Next is the plans and the specifications. This is where we develop the final design and engineering documents. From there, we go into the right-of-way acquisition, if there is any, And then finally, we put this out to bid for construction. This allows us to shorten the overall time frame, which just allows us to go to construction sooner if funds are available. As I mentioned, this makes us more competitive when the state funds are available, and then it positions us for potential federal funds if they are available, because we will be construction ready. The second point here is to work with Caltrans to coordinate any related projects. One of the projects is something that they're doing is an auxiliary lane project along the corridor in Aurora Grandy at the intersections between Grand and Briscoe and El Camino. Then the last point here is to identify local matching funds, and I think that is where the most significant point of the sales tax comes into play. Other issues that we'd like to address, and Steve mentioned this as a second point, is our infrastructure. Well, we do have an annual pavement management program. We are funding some of that through the general fund, but there is an additional need there to provide additional funding to keep up with our road maintenance and road construction projects, including the street improvement projects that we presently have identified in the capital improvement program. The other issue is to upgrade our aging drainage system. And we have drainage culverts out there that need to be repaired. And this is one of the needs that we've identified. And lastly, we show here the improvements to the collection system to prevent pollution and sedimentation and erosion of into the creek system. So that has been also identified as one of our major infrastructure needs.
Station building. In the fire department, the main needs are replacement of the fire ladder truck and some minor additional staffing that have been identified as a need as we transition from a partially, a fully volunteer department to a partially full-time paid department. And so I'd like our police chief, Tony Isles, and our fire chief, Terry Fiebig, to provide a little bit more detail about these two items. Start with our police chief.
Thank you, Steve. A little bit on the history of the police building, the facility. It was actually owned by the phone company prior to 1973, and in June of that year, of course, there was a purchase process, but in June of 73, the police department moved into that facility. At that time, there were 18 members of the police department, 12 were full-time and 6 were part-time. I did a little calculation on square feet, and each person, if you do the math, had 183 square feet to occupy the building as they worked. There was a growth over those the last 33 years, naturally, in terms of the amount of personnel that work for the police department. And currently we have 56, which includes 36 full-time and 20 part-time. When I did the calculations for that, our square foot per person went from 183 down to 121. And that even includes a bit of an expansion that we had in 1990, I believe, 16 years ago. So we're small, ever so over the years, getting smaller and smaller in terms of that space. The other issue that is connected to space is not just staffing, but that's available. Also, in, I think, 1999, of course, I've been here for 4 months, but I think it was 99, the police department was also awarded a FEMA grant. FEMA is the Federal Emergency Management Administration, and that grant was for an expansion of the facility. Unfortunately, the federal government did not fund that grant, so while we did win it, the money was never put into place for the expansion. Another major issue is concerns the Emergency Operations Center, which is a part of the police department. Our Emergency Operations Center really is a building or a room approximately the size, if you can imagine these two desk areas between here and about that size, is pretty small. In an Emergency Operations Center, should an incident occur, such as an earthquake, major flooding, anything like that, in order to manage that particular operation, a space of that size would be very, very difficult because as people talk on phones and work with each other, they literally, physically we'd be bumping into each other, be difficult to talk because of the noise, and as a consequence, as an emergency operations center, it's probably not just at a minimum, but below minimum of what we really need should a major event occur. Thank you.
Good evening. As our city manager told you, there are several areas in the fire department that also come under address as opposed directly to the outside. That and a number of other safety standards have been developed over the years since that truck was manufactured that now no longer allow that to happen. The equipment of today has a lot of different technology that has been introduced, as well as a number of different safety standards that now apply. As we continue to work with that piece of equipment, it is requiring, of course, more and more maintenance. And one of the things that we do know with a piece of equipment like that, as it gets older, metal fatigue starts to set in. And while you might not have road wear that that applies, metal fatigue makes that ladder truck a little bit more difficult each year to maintain and to be certified, and that ladder must actually be certified on an annual basis. One of the other things that we do know is that as the buildings in our communities continue to be developed and different attitudes take place, different planning philosophies apply, we start to see buildings that are a little bit bigger, a little bit taller, and that 75-foot ladder length that we see today is not necessarily adequate for the buildings of today and tomorrow as we move forward. So it would require purchasing a ladder that would have a bit greater length. The cost of that ladder truck is $750,000 today. And we know that by the time we get around to purchasing it, it might even be a little bit more than that. Another thing that we also talked about, a mix of paid and volunteer personnel that work for the department. And quite frankly, the volunteer personnel are just having less and less and less time, and the duties that they used to perform are now being picked up by the people that are paid. And quite frankly, there is somewhat of an imbalance there, and there has been a position that has been identified that should be brought on that would be a paid person versus having that done by a volunteer. With that, I turn it back to the city manager. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief. I think it's also important to point out, though, that with the limited staffing that we've identified for the fire department, even after that staffing is added, that analysis would show that our fire department would continue to be the lowest per capita and per service call, even with the staffing changes, because they're fairly limited. I think we're talking about just one additional staff position that we've identified as necessary at this time. Okay, the last category is ADA improvements. And the city has, for a long time, had a master plan in place to meet full compliance with ADA requirements. And we've been making good progress each year in implementing that plan, given limited resources, but we believe that additional resources are necessary in order to meet full compliance in a more timely period. Now, the most significant project involves the City Hall complex. We have made a number of improvements there that we could. However, there's a few additional improvements that we need to make in order to make it fully compliant, but are very difficult to make without some major costly modifications to those buildings. Our initial City Hall and constructing a new building next door that would house community development, public works administration, building and life safety division, and a new city council chambers. This property and building would be sold to help pay for a portion of the project, and the remainder of the cost would be financed. And we actually have a very conceptual drawing of the additional building that was being proposed, as I say, just at the initial conceptual feasibility study stage. So as you can see, these the total annual cost for these different improvements comes to a little over $1.5 million annually. Now, in the case of the Briscoe-Halcyon Interchange project, the City Hall project, and the police station project, we utilized an assumption that a portion of those project costs would be financed over a 20-year period. In the case of the ladder truck, we used an assumption that those costs would be financed over a 10-year period. And so I want to emphasize that these are not total project costs. These are all annual costs. Just recently, the city included a survey in our Stagecoach Express city newsletter to help get us feedback from the community on prioritizing these needs. And this is the results of that survey. The community ranks street repairs and maintenance first, funding alternatives to meet these needs. And we completed that and at this point have identified a local sales tax measure of a half a cent that would be on the November 2006 ballot as the preferred alternative due to a number of reasons. First of all, it would generate roughly the revenue necessary to meet these needs. We've estimated that a half cent increase would generate about $1.4 million annually. And when you add that to the city's long-range financial plan projections for revenue that we believe will be received from our economic development efforts, which is also an important component of our long-range plan, when you combine those two together, then it generates the revenue necessary to balance our long-range financial plan. Some of the other advantages is that we have a timing opportunity right now. All the cities in the county are looking at a similar measure. And so we have an opportunity here to coordinate with them in trying to propose and hopefully maintain some consistent policy throughout the county, which is a good thing. Next, the sales tax in this county is currently very low. With the half-cent increase, if that were approved, people in Aurora Grandy would still continue to pay a sales tax equal to or lower than that paid by 85% of other people in the state of California. And then lastly, and really most importantly, is that the sales tax is paid by everyone who utilizes the city's infrastructure and services. And so in other words, we believe that makes it the most fair and equitable approach. And it also meant effort level that this was not going to negatively impact our businesses, since that is also a high priority for the city. And so what we did is first of all, this is a list of all cities in California that have successfully implemented local sales tax measures. This doesn't include counties, so there's lots of other areas that have higher sales tax. These are only city measures, because that is what we were concerned with. And so what we did is we contacted each city on this list. And among some other questions, and I have a copy of the survey findings on the back of the table if you'd like to take one with you. Among the questions we asked, we specifically asked them, since the measure has gone into effect, have you had at least one complaint from one business that indicated that they had experienced some type of negative impact on their sales? And not one single city said that they had any issue since the measure went into effect. So now, is this perfect proof that there wouldn't be some impact to local businesses? I'm sure the local businesses are still concerned. No, we can't make a specific commitment based on this, but we did feel it gave us a pretty good comfort level to proceed in the process. So based on that, if the city council now decides to proceed with the process, they will have some decisions and choices regarding how the local sales tax measure is structured. The first question is whether it will be a special tax or a general tax. A special tax requires a two-thirds vote and is restricted for a specific purpose. The revenues are restricted for a specific purpose. The fact that a special tax is much more difficult to pass, we also have some concerns about a special tax just because of how restrictive it is. And by that, I mean we know of a lot of agencies, and you see this right now in the state of California, a lot of agencies that have legally earmarked so much of their money that they no longer have the flexibility to address fiscal needs and emergencies and problems that come up. So currently, we're leaning towards the general tax. So then the question becomes, if you go with a general tax, the question becomes, how can people know what they're voting for when they go to vote and what that money's going to go for, and how can they have a say in how the money is going to be spent? And some communities we researched address that by accompanying the ballot measure with what are known as advisory measures. And in the advisory measures, they ask the voter the question of whether or not they would like to see the revenues from the measure, if it's approved, utilized for a specific purpose or purposes, and then those purposes or purpose are outlined in the measure itself. Now, this is not legally binding on the city, but it does provide the voter an opportunity to participate in sharing how they would like to see the funding spent. And it also provides the city the opportunity to communicate to the voters what the funding needs are. So we are leaning towards recommending that those be included. The next question then becomes, if the money is still not restricted, how do we hold the city accountable? I mean, my sense is that in our case, there's a number of problems with the sunset clause. Specifically, it would not enable us to accomplish what we need to do in order to meet those needs that we'd identified earlier. And that's because the city needs an ongoing, available, and secure revenue source that we can use to finance some of those major projects that we want to move forward with quickly. And we would not be able to in a responsible manner, finance long-term costs unless we had an assurance that that money was going to be available during that period of time. Now, there is some discussion and some possibility of just doing a very long-term sunset clause. And that our main concern with that is just whether we would be misleading the public into putting some date down that gave them the appearance that this had a finite need in it and was going to go away at a certain time. Of course, it could go away at that time if it was voted down. But the truth is that a lot of these projects are going to be ongoing expenses. There are a number of improvements. While they are capital projects, they're going to be an ongoing need. And much of what we've seen here and are trying to address is a shift of funds that have taken place from the cities to the state. And we believe at this point that's a permanent shift. Now, if that turns out not to be a permanent shift, we do have some control measures that we think could address that. The two things that we want to recommend is, one, to require an annual published report be sent to every resident each year. The sales tax measure is still necessary. And so, in other words, if there was some, let's say there was some new ballot measure at the state level that suddenly allocated a significant portion of money to the city to meet some of the needs that we'd identified through this process. Well, if some other money became available that could supplement this money, then that would be reviewed at that time, and the city council would have the flexibility to determine whether to suspend the tax if they thought that was temporary, eliminate the tax if they thought the need was no longer going to be there, or to reduce the tax if they felt we got some money to reduce the need and didn't need the full amount of tax anymore. And that would all be a public hearing, so that would be an opportunity to for people to come and be involved in that process as well. The other thing that I always think that sunset clauses are maybe a little bit overrated is because everybody needs to remember that at any time, any year, anybody in the community can, through a fairly easy process with gathering signatures, can place a measure on a ballot to get rid of this tax or do a number of other things. So there's always an option available for folks to put something on the ballot to get rid of something if something came up and the community felt that it was no longer necessary and they weren't happy with the way the city was conducting it. Lastly, just the next steps coming up, we will continue for the next couple months doing our public education program. For any of you here, anybody watching, the next step, we will be bringing all this information and presenting it to the City Council on May 9th at their meeting and be asking for direction from them at that point. If they choose to move ahead with the process, we would then draft a measure for their consideration, which would be scheduled on the June 27th, 2006 meeting agenda. All of those meetings both take place at 7 o'clock here in the council chambers, if anybody would like to attend. And then November 7th is the actual election which the measure would fall on. So with that, we have a lot of folks here that would be glad to try to answer any questions that you have, or if you have feedback that you would just like us to be aware of and to pass on to the council. We're interested in either. I need a pen. Thanks. And I think we have a little, just so we can hear you when we're taping the thing. Sorry, I know that's a burden, but
does the city or combining with other cities have the ability to lobby the state to get our funding? We should have somebody paid in Sacramento to protect our interests.
We actually do that. That's a. Oh, I'm sorry. I want to be able to see over here. We actually have been doing that last few years through. It's been a program actually been running for many, many years, but that specific component has really been strengthened the last few years and has been pretty effective. The League of California Cities, which most cities belong to, and one of their major charges is to advocate our area, and then all those regional reps work together to advocate for all cities around California. Now, they are largely responsible for the success we had with Prop 1A. If you remember that, that was a proposition on the ballot a couple of years ago that we were successful in. First time we'd been successful in anything like that that involved being an actual political force in a measure in Sacramento. That measure, when it was designed, there was some discussion about trying to get some of the other funding back. And the political experts, after all the polls and the things they did, they determined that that probably wasn't going to pass. And so what we decided would be beneficial enough to cities is if we could just get an agreement from the state, or not an agreement, basically force them and limit them to only take from us what they've been taking from us the last several years when they started doing this. So at least if they couldn't take new additional revenues, at least then we could begin our financial planning and be able to, our financial planning could be more beneficial if we knew that they can't come down any year and just take a whole nother revenue source. And that was successful largely to you folks and all the support that they got. And so we were doing that. The effort is still working towards trying to go beyond that and get additional funding. But that part is very, very difficult. And we don't have a – we're getting a little bit here and there. The transportation funding, we got a little bit back this year. But we don't expect that to bring in any major new revenue sources, especially given the problems the state is still in. But the important thing is with Prop 1A, we're looking at this when you can combine Prop 1A, which gives us some security in the future about what we can expect from the state. If you combine it with this measure, which replaces some of that other funding and really focuses on meeting the needs in the future, when we combine those two together, then we feel we really control our destiny and we can have some security in terms of going forward and in a very effective way plan and fund our needs in the future. It really kind of gives us the control we've been wanting for many years because we believe we can manage our resources effectively if we can just get them to leave us alone, they being the state.
Hello. Okay. I'm Heather Jensen. I'm speaking as a resident in Arroyo Grande, and I have a couple of points that I would like to bring out for consideration. I am very sympathetic and supportive to our city staff and very supportive in the needs of public safety. You would not feel comfortable or the community feel like there's any kind of guarantee that the feel-good campaign promises for police and fire and roads are just that. And unless it's locked into a special tax, I think that we're all subject to some manipulation with the funds that this increased sales tax would create. I also feel that a two-thirds special tax like that would be much more palatable in a campaign. I can see that you could work on that specifically and have much more of a positive voice in where the money is going. When it goes into the general fund, it goes into the pot, and with the majority of the council changing every 2 years, the disbursement of those funds is basically up for grabs every 2 years as the majority could change. And I just feel uncomfortable with it going into the general fund with a simple majority tax. My second point is your finance director so aptly pointed out the competition from the various areas, say as Napomo, with businesses going in. And that leads to my second point, that I think Arroyo Grande is bringing on a lot of these conditions and situations themselves due to the philosophy of elected officials and appointed commissioners that have been discouraging business coming in and business expansion. And I know verbally they say they're business friendly, but when you look at last time's Planning Commission meeting with the expansion request for the VCA South County Veterinary, and that is a lot of the reason why, and alongside, you're looking at the decrease in the sales tax. Yes, we could have some of those increased businesses instead of going to Napomo or to various neighboring communities, but everyone is discouraged, or they're putting up so many roadblocks for a new business coming in, trying to appease problems of many, many years. It's just not fair. And they walk away and say, forget Arroyo Grande. This isn't, so I'm thinking it's not just the immediate need, but there's a whole lot of more that needs to be fixed. Encourage businesses to come in, which would, even at this present sales tax, would increase your sales tax revenue. And I think there's a lot to that, and that's why I'm saying some sort of a guarantee with a special tax that the increased tax would go where the promises are saying where it is. Thank you.
Okay. Let me respond to those briefly. First of all, in terms of the special tax, that's something I think we already explained kind of our angle in terms of why we think the general tax would be preferable. But that is something that's still being considered. It has not been ruled out yet, so we appreciate the feedback on that. As far as business-friendly, I think, it's hard for me to kind of get into justifying every single argument or position or action that's taken by any particular Planning Commission members or City Council members. I can say overall, in the city's defense, though, that when you look at the big picture, we're pretty proud of our efforts to be business-friendly and move forward in economic development, have a successful economic development program. To balance those, but I can say they all have a commitment to moving forward with encouraging business in the community. Citywide, as far as our policy and our economic development plan, I know the council's direction, we think we're making great progress on that. If you go down Grand Avenue, we are very close to working on a joint project, potential redevelopment project in the whole center there with the Cookie Crock Market. Across from that street, another targeted redevelopment site is the blighted area where the pet store used to be and the mobile home, the mobile homes are stored there. That's been identified as a targeted redevelopment site, and we've had a lot of discussions with the potential developer there in terms of bringing in a lot of new and upscale businesses in both those developments. We've working very closely with the Spencer's Market Center. We actually took the lead in creating a way in which they now can get rid of that retention basin in the front of the center and produce a pad for a business that we're currently negotiating with that would be a great addition to the community. The second phase of the Longs project, something Rob has worked very closely on, and that's going to come to fruition soon. So I don't want to argue with you as far as there are a lot of maybe things that are done that give that impression, and there may be specific things being done at times that do discourage businesses and cause problems. So there's certainly ways we can improve in that area, and we want to improve. And I think Rob and I have a meeting set up with Judith, the new executive director at the Chamber, next week to talk about how we can work more closely together. So there's definitely ways.
I pretty much ditto what Heather said. I don't think it could be spoken much better. However, I have a couple other issues, and I agree that Steve and the staff do a fabulous job, and I know he has to play a neutral party in this. Feels like Switzerland sometimes, mediating both sides, so I appreciate that also. But I think the city of Arroyo Grande can't afford to put in a Briscoe interchange at this time, and it should be Caltrans helping, and I apologize for coming in late because maybe you've addressed some of these issues already. So I think that they should be helping with that. And if we want to do a new city hall, and I do agree that we need one, I think that that would be better put as a bond issue as opposed to a sales tax and putting money aside for that in that way. I know that the argument on the sales tax is that the tourists will also pay for part of the sales tax, and I agree with that to some extent, but the citizens are also paying for it. And at a time right now when the real estate market is down and the gas prices are up so high, I think it's a real poor time to put in a sales tax increase. I know that, to my understanding, that our annual budget is between $10 and $12 million, and the last time I asked, we had over a $2 million reserve. And so I don't know if that's still the case, but if you say that 25% of the sales tax is to build for the future, I think that we need more specifics as opposed to a general fund, like Heather said. And I hear my voice creaking. I'm glad I wrote this down. In regards to the El Campo overpass, perhaps this could be done by approving some of the commercial or housing developments that are on the books. Then the Arroyo Grande and the San Luis Obispo County, the state of California, and the developers could all help pay for that bill. And I know that they should be having about 1,400 new homes in the Monarch Division development.
To think about is when we talk about bond measures, you know, if we were to try to do a bond measure for the, you mentioned the City Hall project. I don't know if we wanted to do a bond measure for the police station. If we try to kind of pick off these projects individually and do bond measures, those bond measures are paid solely, not just by residents, but solely by property owners in the city. And so the property owners in the city pay the entire way. Now, we did do that in the fire station. It seemed a little more appropriate there because property owners kind of have an unequal benefit from fire services because a large part of the fire department's effort is geared at protecting property as well as life. But there seems some justification there. But that's just kind of one of the advantages we saw in the sales tax. I just wanted to point that out to you. Other than that, we definitely, you know, appreciate the compliments. I want to make sure that I also give the credit to the City Council, since they're not here this evening, though, that they really provide the leadership of what we do. And not everybody agrees with every issue, but we have an extremely professional and well-thought-out council, and they are very business supportive and have really provided the direction to the things that you see us doing, and they're very supportive of those things. So,
God, it must be me. Ira Hughes, I'm a property owner, citizen of Arroyo Grande, as well as a merchant in the city of Arroyo Grande. I guess I'm concerned, throw that out. That's what I'm going to say on that. But the benchmark studies, I'm kind of at a loss on benchmark studies because you got to pick and choose all the cities. They were close to Roy Grant or close to Arroyo Grande and their role, but in talking with some of the other merchants, when the Costco opened in San Luis Obispo, how many people stopped going to Santa Maria because it was 0.5% higher sales tax? They want to shop in a lower sales tax area. They spend $500. It's 25 bucks in their pocket they didn't have to spend. I got a whole bunch of notes. That was your benchmark studies. What about, and again, compared to the state as a whole, I mean, comparing all cities, what about the cities, you know, we talk about other states in this country that don't have any sales tax. They don't have any state income tax, and yet they're surviving, and it's not on their agenda to add one of those. My question mark is, if we make the sales tax higher in the city of Arroyo Grande, will you guarantee to me, and I know you can't, that my revenue won't go down? And can you guarantee to the citizens of Arroyo Grande that it won't go down? Yeah, we get the person trapped here. He has to buy gas driving in and out of town. But, I mean, a gasoline up 75 cents a gallon from a year ago, that's 4 cents a gallon more in sales tax revenue that's being generated for the city of Arroyo Grande. And that's just one item. Last time you shopped at Albertsons, I'm willing to bet it's not the same bill it was a year ago, and you paid more sales tax. That's all being generated. And, yeah, it would be more if we raised it a quarter. I'll go to Pismo and shop if I have to. Long-term trends, and I thought this was wild. While property taxes projected to continue to increase a little large, we might evaluate that. That would be something I could ask Steve at a later time. But last year, Roy Grandy, not including residents, or this is only residents, not including commercial or vacant lots, 324 homes were sold in Roy Grandy. Total value, $250 million. Don't know what their original price was, but it seems to me you didn't do equal for equal. That's $770,000 per parcel average that was sold. And if those were $400,000 homes before, or 300, that seems to be an increase in sales tax revenue. Yeah, we might be decreasing, you know, if it goes down to half that this year. You know, Roy Grande's still a very desirable place to live, and the people we have coming in can't afford to buy. I wrote notes, Steve. I'm working on them. funding strategy. The fire ladder truck. You know, Terry brought up, we got one that's 20 years old, a 70-foot ladder. We want to buy a $750,000 one. We have limitations on, okay, it's not safety, you know, secure in this state. Can we sell the truck? Can we sell it to another state? Is there a couple $100,000 we can get out of it to another state? You know, that will offset that $750,000 price of that truck. So something to keep in mind that we can obviously buy, you know, sell our used truck out.
By the way, we're also trying to get the other cities that we share our services with to reduce that cost.
Well, I think it's a great idea personally, but, you know, I can't evaluate on – I think consolidating the five cities is a good idea, but that'll get me in trouble now that I've said it. But it's services. We need to consolidate our services to save us money if it's possible, all of us.
Right now, that truck already serves those areas, so we're just trying to get them to pitch in.
Well, that'd be nice. Right. Oh. My screwed up notes here. Your accountability issue on your paper you handed out. 10% annual published report to each resident. My line would be, less than 10% of the people respond to anything you send out. I mean, that's really the sad news. I would say that if we're going to go accountability, city council, if we do this, they should review it not every 5 years, but every year. They need to look at us in what we are doing. And it's going back to what I said earlier, that guaranteed sales tax revenue. Can we be guaranteed that it won't decrease? Because the city council needs to support businesses and growth in this community. New development of businesses is not going to hurt this city. It's sales tax without increasing the rate. You know, my line is, let's encourage them to come here. Let's encourage people to spend money. And if we're 0.5% cheaper than everybody else, maybe they will. And 0.5% might be all they need.
I'm sorry, I didn't see the 10% in the accountability slide. Am I missing some?
No, my comment is that when you send out a letter to the city, I'm guessing that the little thing I got here, town hall meeting tonight, that 10% of the population would show up. Well, that's 160 people in my book. And how many do we have? 15. So 1%? I don't know how to get everybody out here, but I think it's a concern for everybody. But we just don't get the response, unfortunately, to all the, you know, this is an issue to me, and I'm here. If it was something else, I might not be here.
There's two different objectives to those different things. The meeting specifically designed so every single resident knows how that money's going to be used for. Hopefully, there won't need to be a meeting. Hopefully, everybody will look at that report. It's being spent specifically as we said it would, and you can toss it and be happy. If you get it and it looks like things the cities are doing that aren't consistent with what you thought, that's when you call City Hall and what's going on. Then we have to have a meeting and discuss it. But the intent is just to make sure every single resident knows what's going on and can evaluate whether the city is doing it the way they said they were or are they not. A couple other things. Benchmark studies. We did include all the cities within those categories. So remind me your question on the benchmark studies.
You of the entire state. I mean, you don't have San Luis Obispo yet. There are 45,000 population. But on the same line, where are you? You were given numbers of, second lowest in fire, second lowest in police, second lowest, What do we compare to the guys that are spending that are bigger? And I've heard from the previous chief that we're one of the top in the state. And I see that we're one of the lowest in the state. I think we have a great police department. A great fire department. I think our growth with the city and those departments are great. But how does it compare to the state as a whole, not just what I'm looking at is you can make anything in a survey be what you want it to be. But what is it really in comparison to
other services? You have cities that don't have fire departments, police departments. I read about a city down south today that hasn't had an election in 20 years because they only have 20 people that live there, and all the people are city employees, and they vote the same guys, and nobody opposes them, so they never have an election. Now they've gotten in trouble in court. So anyways, that's pretty much irrelevant, but the relevance is you can see how different these organizations are, and if we included all those, you wouldn't be able to draw any kind of conclusions. That's why we tried to make it very objective, where we didn't pick and choose cities. We came up with criteria, and then within that criteria, we included everybody. So we wanted to be able to show to everybody we didn't specifically pick cities that we thought were going to compare well to us.
Based on housing cost, was that one of the criteria?
Housing costs was not.
Is it based on the annual income of each resident, or the estimated income of each resident?
No.
Two other factors that might be, per capita. How do you base, what is your population base? What is the net worth? There are criteria. I mean, Roy Grandy's age, was it our last census, 48? Wasn't it 48 is our average age? What are these other homes? What are these other cities?
I'm not arguing that there's different criteria.
You can make it almost anything you want is what my point was. And I apologize for just saying the state as a whole. But there are other unique criteria that we could add to that same study that might define it a little bit differently. Because I will argue with you, and I think both chiefs will, that we aren't substandard. We aren't one of the lowest, but we have one of the best. But why do we...
In almost every category, we found that our outputs were low, but our inputs were low, but our outputs were high. And then just the only comment on the... evaluating staffing as things change and workloads change. Hopefully, when we presented, what we've gone through recently and those measures, hopefully that's evidence that we go through pretty diligently and delete staff where they're not needed and try to determine how we can become more efficient. So I think we have a track record of doing that, and that will continue to be an emphasis.
Earl Balgeman. I live at 505 La Pointe. I agree with just about everything that was said here. In fact, I take every chance I get with other people to mention the kind of things that were talked here. About, 10 years ago, I lived in Pismo Beach, and their budget at that time was $9 million, and they had 8,500 people, something like that. So it was costing $1,000 per person in Pismo for city government. And if you look, and at that time I looked at Grover Beach, and it was about the same. I think it was 12 million for 12,000 people. And, of course, here, I think it was last year, we had a budget of 18 million for the 16,000 people, and that's 1,100 per person. And, of course, that points to consolidating the five cities, because as for, or you estimate about $1.5 million annually to satisfy your needs. And as I understand your view graphs, about a quarter of the revenue is due to sales tax. It's in 24%, I think, in one of your view graphs. And that's, if your two-year budget is $38 million, you're talking about $19 million per year, and a quarter is roughly $5 million. Well, if you increase the sales tax, you know, 0.5%, and it's now 7.25%, that's only going to give you about a 7% increase, and you would like to have a 30%, not 30%, $1.5 million annually out of 19. I don't think you're going to get enough money out of that 0.5%, are you? Or am I wrong?
I think I lost you there, but just to go through it is, keep in mind the current sales tax that we get, we only get out of the 7.25 you currently pay, we get 1 penny out of that. We get 1 cent. And so this would be a 0.5 cent increase, but the entire 0.5 cent would come to the city. So it's essentially a 50% increase over what we're getting in sales tax currently. And I believed we were at around 2.7, and by the time this went into effect, we thought we'd be up to about 2.8. So 50% of that is 1.4. That's how we came up with that projection.
Okay, so that increase in the sales tax will give you like the $1.5 million per year. Right?
Close. Now, we all, you know, it kind of goes back to the issue of business friendly and stuff. We component over on this overall plan also, but by itself, it's no way we could get to where we needed to be. But together, the two and continued cost control measures together in our long-range financial plan balance our long-term needs and long-term revenues.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
How much of the property tax do you get if you only get
how much property tax do you get if you only get a quarter of, you know, or of the sales tax, 7.75, you only get a quarter?
Yeah, that's a really complicated one. What are we at? I thought it was higher than that. 2.9%?
No, 2.9
million. But what was the percent? I think the percent is around somewhere between 14 and 20, as I recall. Yeah. Proposition 13 really made the property tax thing complicated because every... You had these different agencies paying in property tax at that time, and they divided it up, or each kind of had their own rate. And so what they did is they took everybody, you know, what was the county getting, what was their rate, what was the school district's rate, what was the city's rate, and, okay, at that time, if you add them all up, your percentage was such and such. Well, each city was totally different. So, you know, cities that were very fiscally conservative and kept their property taxes down, they ended up with a very small percentage. So years later, they're being penalized. So every city and every community has a different percentage, and it's pretty small.
$1 million worth of homes last year in the city of Roy Grande, and let's say the base was 125, so they doubled in value. Is that 1.2 million worth of increased at 10% sales tax that the city just got on those homes?
On those homes. But keep in mind, any increased value in homes in the community, we only benefit from those that are sold or built. Under Prop 13, there's no increase in sales tax unless the home is sold and reassessed or built or added onto.
Sales tax or property tax? I'm talking property tax.
Did I say sales tax?
You said sales tax.
Okay. property tax. Yeah, property tax. It's only when the home is sold or reassessed for some other reason if they're doing
$770,000 home just got sold, and it was $450,000. That $320,000 you're going to get $3,200. Oh, I gave you 10%. I was being lower, but 32 is 4,000 more in those homes. Times 235 for last year. That's how many homes. So it's about $1.something million just last year. And admittedly, as you said, they are going down. I guess I'm, what I'm looking for is, you know, I see sales tax revenue on the charter in the newspaper saying, well, Roy Graney's gone up. We did, you know, $2 million, $4 million for the quarter, better sales tax than the previous year. But I'm looking at these homes, if we're selling $770,000 homes where we are replacing them on the tax scrolls from $400,000, isn't that an increase to city revenues?
Well, I mean, the fact is we've had very good increases in property taxes the last four because there's still a lot of homes that will assess at a higher rate. So that's why we're saying we're going to continue to get some growth in that, but it's going to gradually slow down. But that's not going to, you know, continue forever. It's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a bubble, and it's kind of the situation in the state when they had their bubble in the dot-com industries, and they used that bubble to go start, you know, hiring staff and adding on programs and all those kind of things and tried to think that they could count on them long-term. We feel this is going to get us through and is definitely going to help us for a while, but we don't want to count on that bubble as a long-term financing mechanism because it's going to level out after a while.
But it's about $770,000. That $400,000 is not going to go down unless they sell it at a lower price.
Right. That's why I say for the next few years, we're going to continue to benefit from that. Even if it levels off, we'll have some of those houses getting sold and reassessed. But over time, we believe that'll start. We'll still get increases, but it'll start being lower increases.
Steve, because I think that the national average is 5 years in a house, and I don't know whether we're ahead of the national average or behind it, but they're selling approximately 25 homes per month in Arroyo Grande with about 200 for sale right now in Arroyo Grande, which is about 8-month inventory. And so I'm sure that a lot of those paid maybe a little higher than the $400,000 maybe, you know, because maybe were more recent sales for the resales, but still there should be significant tax increase there. So I think Ira and I were looking at it. Thank you.
Yeah, we've been depending on that. But to some extent, it balanced out the low growth we were having in our sales tax.
Paula Richards, if I understand correctly, in your Proposition 13, property taxes will still go up no more than 2% a year. So even on the older homes, you're still seeing increases on top of the new ones that are turning still at a pretty decent clip. I had a question about the FEMA grant. What attempts have been made to collect on that funding? And when was it approved? And how much was it?
Chief's new. I guess I better take that. We have been working very closely for the last 5 years with the funding representative from Congressman Thomas's office. Actually, I was back there and met with him at one time. He's been out here to meet with us several times to try to strategize. But the problem was that the Congress just never appropriated the fund. The program was approved and the grant was approved, and then it goes to Congress for appropriation. They didn't appropriate the money. And since then, you know, with Homeland Security, they've completely shifted their priorities. And so at this point, we've pretty much been told that it's gone away and it's not available. But for three or four years there, we were making a pretty concentrated effort and doing everything we can to work with our legislators to get some kind of assistance and get them to pull that together.
Just another question. If the sales tax is approved, what's to keep the state from hijacking a portion of that as well?
That would be the Prop 1A that I mentioned ago. In fact, before Prop 1A, you know, I don't think we'd want to propose this because we would have been in fear of that. But with Prop 1A, as the state continues where they can take something for like a temporary basis and they have to pay it back and those kind of things. But that measure pretty much restricts them from taking new monies and additional monies in the future. So that's what I was saying. That combined with this, suddenly we have some pretty good financial security that we can start doing good long-range planning and really control ourselves what we're, you know, what we're going to do. Or feedback? Okay. Any department directors have anything to add or you're dying to respond to? Okay. Well, thank you again very, very much. Like I said, this is just really important to us. We just want to get the education out. And so if this goes ahead, we just want to have a comfort level that we've done everything we can to at least make sure that people all understand it. And so we're very appreciative that you would take the time to participate and be here. Please call us at City Hall at any time if you have other questions, if you want us to come out and meet with a group or a group of your neighbors. Any way we can get out and talk to more people and share the information, we'd be very happy to do that. And we appreciate all your input, all those things. I'm taking notes, and we're going to try to consolidate all these things and hopefully accurately reflect them to the council when we make our presentation on May 9th in a couple weeks. And everybody is definitely invited to come to that meeting also, and if you have input that you want to give directly to the council.